All right, here we go on a Monday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Hope everybody had a great weekend. Definitely feels like fallout. I loved it this morning, man. It was actually kind of cold this morning, you know? Felt good.
Walked
the dog
seats?
This morning. I don't have heated seats. Mr. I'm sorry.
Excuse me,
Mr. New Car.
I'm sorry. I did use the heated seats this morning. I'm not going to apologize for it. It's quite nice.
I've obviously been in cars with heated seats. They are amazing. Honestly, better than the heated seats. I'll say the cooled seats are almost better than the heated seats because there's something about that. Your car's been sitting in the sun all day, and the cooled seats when you've been sweating already. That's a good
tough
feeling.
To beat.
But it was nice to have a little bit of this some chill in the air this morning as obviously we are. In the middle of October already, and we were talking when we transitioned from our show from Dusty and Bob, and Dusty was talking about Halloween and stuff. Like, that's right around the corner as well. So we'll get a recap on how things went for you and your kids.
We did go to Worlds of Fun for
Friday's show.
Haunt.
If you missed the show Friday, Cody was wondering whether or not he should take his kids to this haunted house, essentially, and we said you got to report back Monday, so we're going to find out. We're going to find out how that went and if your kids are sleeping well or not, basically. That's basically what we got to find out.
It's a fair follow-up.
Yeah. You guys can always interact with us on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. So let's just get right into it. The Chiefs, they're coming off of a bye, and now full focus is on them, of course, moving forward, and they'll head out to Santa Clara this weekend and take on the 49ers. But we were reminded, I think, again, yesterday watching the NFL, where you saw a couple more star players suffer some injuries, most notably, unfortunately, for the Lions, Aiden Hutchinson, and just a really serious leg injury that he is obviously done for the season.
Brutal.
And every team is dealing with injuries. You, of course, hope they don't happen to anybody, let alone your star players. That's what happened to the Lions. The Chiefs, of course, have had it happen. We can go team by team, essentially. And when you think about I'll call it the second half of the season for the Chiefs, even though I know it's not mathematically the second half. But to me, any time, Cody, you have a bye week, after the bye, I just call it your second half of the season, even if the math doesn't add up.
Even if it's like really a third of the season you've played?
I kind of do, though, just because to me, it's separating the two. And you think about your concerns, and for me, other than injury stuff, I think it has to be still overall the offensive production, of course, and whether or not if they do not go and trade for a wide receiver in the next couple of weeks, can this defense continue to play at this level? They have shown it now for over a year and a half that they can play at this level.
Yeah, they have over and over and over again. And so I understand if you said, hey, the second half of the season or post bye week, because it really just gives you the same thing it gives the coaches, a chance to evaluate what you are as a team. You and I both agree that we think that they'll do something about the wide receiver position. Okay, great. I still think it's that they cannot suffer one single more major injury out of any starter and continue to take on water. Just like a boat, a team works the exact same way. There's only so much water you can take on before this thing's sinking. And when you lose the number one running back, number one wide receiver, number two wide receiver, if they lose an interior defensive lineman, and I'm not just including Chris Jones, an exterior defensive lineman like Karlaftis, if they lost Jalen Watson or McDuffie or Reed, you know, like, I think there are a lot of pieces. I don't think it's just one. Take on a little bit more water from the injury front, and it's a problem from a season-long perspective. Can they lose someone for a couple of weeks? Yeah. Those injuries are still going to crop up because it's the NFL and that's the way it works. But unless you can guarantee me that Hollywood Brown is coming back at some point this year, or that Isaiah Pacheco will be the same when he comes back, if he comes back later this year, they really can't take on any more water on the serious injury front. They're at maximum capacity on that end.
Well, this is why a lot of teams don't three-peat. This is why teams usually don't win back-to-back, is because the injuries eventually catch up to you. But I'll say it, like, we look at the entire NFL and everybody is dealing with this. And usually a lot of times, not always, it is who's healthier come playoff time. And at the end of the season, that usually helps your cause. And last year, the Chiefs suffered, you know, the Charles Minshew injury in the postseason and all that. But other than that, they actually got a lot of their pieces back and healthy late in the season. And their key players were all healthy late in the season. It doesn't,
sure,
you know, to this point in time, as you said, maybe Hollywood Brown is back, but we've never seen him play an NFL game with this team.
I saw him play one snap in a preseason game for this team.
One snap in Jacksonville. that is it. I hear you on injuries. I just think that applies for most teams. You know what I mean?
Like, I just think some teams can still take on a serious injury because they haven't had as many serious injuries as the Chiefs have. Maybe the Lions are in that group now because they just lost their version of losing Chris Jones, right? A dominating force who can control an entire game. And there are certainly other teams with injuries like Christian McCaffrey, right? But they expect McCaffrey back at some point. Like some of the other maybe. Injuries.
We'll see. Achilles tendonitis going to Germany for advice. We'll see. For the sake of the NFL, I hope at some point Christian McCaffrey is back because he's obviously one of the best players in NFL history at this position.
And if there's one position we know any team can take on an injury, it's running back. Generally speaking, you can survive that. They turned Jordan Mason into a 1,500-yard back overnight. The third guy had 100.
Grindo or whatever his name is.
Never heard of the man in my life. Don't know. Drew probably knows where he played college, but I don't know anything about
Do you know?
Grindo.
Oh, he's hurrying, putting his headset on.
Started at Wisconsin. There, transferred to Louisville.
Oh, Wisconsin.
That's why. Okay. Of course,
he's
Wisconsin.
He's technically out of Louisville, but yes, he's a Wisconsin guy.
Okay. Never heard of him before in my life, and now he was a 100-yard rusher. So at least at that position, they can take on some water. But I mean, the Chiefs lost some incredibly important things. And the other part of it, you're like, well, they haven't had any major injuries on defense. Just the ticky-tack ones. I'm like, yeah, but the whole thing comes back to this, which is for the second straight year, like it or not, this team is not led by or wins games by their offense. They're a defensive team. I know people don't like hearing that because then you start thinking about like the way the Steelers won for all those years and you're like, ugh, it's just kind of a gross way to win football games and it's less enjoyable for me. And they have the number one quarterback in the NFL. How can they be a team led by their defense? I'll just be honest. It's the best unit on the team for the second straight
it's not close.
Year. It's,
yeah.
I mean, it's the better unit. Yeah. Like, that's why they're led
by. People like offense. We live in the fantasy football world now, so it's all everybody wants, you know, offense and points. It's why the NFL for the last decade has changed rules to benefit the offense more than the defense. That is all true. And there's a boring brand of football, which is what the Steelers typically have been here recently, but they're winning games in actually a similar fashion. You and I brought this comparison up, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and people like take it as a shot at the Chiefs, but the way they're winning and the way the Steelers are winning is almost identical right now. It really isn't different. I understand their quarterback is named Justin Fields, and here in Kansas City, the guy is Patrick Mahomes, who's going to go down as the greatest, if not second greatest quarterback of all time. But right now, how they're winning games is actually not any different than how the Pittsburgh Steelers are winning football games.
I would say there's one small change, and that the Steelers are winning by getting turnovers more and taking the ball away more. Yeah. And the Chiefs' slight uptick in that is because they have a better quarterback.
Yeah, and let me be clear.
They can have slightly better quarterback play and get less turnovers, and the Steelers can't.
Yeah, be clear. I'm not telling you that the Steelers are better than Kansas City. I'm just saying the way they're winning and the way the Chiefs are winning is identical right now.
Yeah, it's not dramatically different enough. The only other big question we'd have is the same one we've had all year, which is, will they improve their wide receiver position, or will Xavier Worthy take the same leap in production that we saw a guy named Rashee Rice take? And I'll just be honest, wide receiver, other than quarterback, is the single most difficult position to predict from a draft and development standpoint in the entire league. So me banking on Xavier Worthy will be as good as Rashee Rice was, just no chance you can actually count on that. Because wide receiver, again, is an incredibly volatile position from a draft and development standpoint. It just is.
Different type of receiver too, all the way in any way. You know, I mean, the type of routes I think that you will eventually, as his career continues for Xavier Worthy and Rice, they're just two different types of players. Now, I think Worthy has a chance to end up being a much better route runner. This was the one thing, even many, many years with Tyreek Hill, everybody just thought Tyreek Hill was just a speedster. Like, that's all he could do. And I think people throughout his career have realized, no, Tyreek Hill is actually a great route runner on top of that. Yeah. And that's hopefully what happens for Worthy as his career progresses, maybe this year, if not into the next year, which is that we all know the speed element, but can he continue to get better and better as a route runner? That's the answer. Like, if you're asking me, by week 15, by the playoffs, if Worthy is going to have an even bigger impact and improve, the question will be if the route running continues to get better and better. I'm not saying he's bad at it right now, but he, you know, as you learn more and more of the offense, you're going to also become a better route runner. If you're not thinking as much, you're just going out there and playing football and truly utilizing your skill set, and it just comes to you so easy at that point in time. So I think the wide receiver room, no doubt, for this offense to not just be 12th to 14th in points per game again, which is where they're at. I haven't looked after.
I
yesterday.
I haven't looked after yesterday, but
they
I'm
were
sure
14th entering the weekend. Scoring was up this week in the NFL, so they might have dropped down, honestly. I'm not sure. Like, scoring was actually up yesterday.
There were a lot of teams who dropped, like, 50 for whatever reason.
Bucs put up, like, 51 points on the Saints. That was a crazy game.
Saints defense looks as bad as their offense looked good in the first two weeks.
Saints have come back down to earth. It was fun, Clint Kubiak, for 2 weeks. It was a good run there for a couple weeks where everybody was praising them.
Chiefs are currently at 15th.
Okay, so they fell back a spot. All right. They fell back one spot.
Number one offense in the NFL, Detroit.
Well, when you put up 49, like I think it was yesterday, we'll talk about the Cowboys. Don't worry. I can't wait to talk about the Dallas Cowboys later on in the show.
Hilarious
that
franchise.
That is for sure.
Between that and the Jags, I see somebody over in the text line complaining about how bad of a coach Doug Peterson is. Boy, there are some real, like, expectation did not meet reality moments for a couple of these teams this year. Those two being a couple of them.
Mentioned wide receiver, and so with wide receiver conversations in the NFL, of course, Davante Adams' name will continue to come up in the NFL. Not here for Kansas City necessarily, no, but one, the first report yesterday morning from Adam Schefter, this is just a sign of the Raiders trying to drive up the price, correct? Because the report from Schefter was that they have received interest from other teams, but one source told ESPN it's not phone is ringing off the hook interest. That makes sense. Because the following sentence said, the Raiders could just opt against trading him altogether. So we'll just hold on to him. Yeah, that's exactly right. That they're not going to hold on to him, but they're obviously not
they're
happy
say
with
that
the,
publicly.
They're not happy with the current return that they would get for one Davante Adams.
So this is not surprising news. He is owed $44 million next year, or you got to eat a $15 million dead cap hit next year. So the only teams who can trade for you are somebody who can absorb that kind of dead cap hit, or even worse, absorb a $44 million extension, or give him, or a $44 million hit, or give him an extension. Like, that's asking a lot of things for a wide receiver who isn't even healthy, technically, by what you're telling us.
Yeah.
So I got to trade for an unhealthy wide receiver who's going to cost me $44 million next year, whose opt-out I can't even get out of. That is not a valuable trade asset. Other than him being a good wide receiver and teams be interested in that, that is not the kind of thing where you just go and be like, I'd like a second round pick, please. No, that's a fourth round pick. And I'm sure when you're getting four calls, that's it. And they're all like, we'll give you a fourth. Probably doesn't sound all that interesting to you. But also, that's just your way of publicly saying,
sure,
we'd like more, please.
Does any team, though, go way up in your mind if I tell you they acquire Davante Adams in the next couple of weeks, though? We know the heavy rumors are the Jets for obvious reasons, and the tie-in relationship-wise with Aaron Rodgers, not to mention the Jets are as all-in as any team can possibly be from a front office perspective and, of course, a head coach perspective. They already fired Robert Saleh. Quarterback perspective, you have a 40-plus-year-old quarterback. I mean, so the Davante Adams part is definitely there. The team that I actually am curious if they would surprise people in trade is a team that is playing the Jets tonight. That's the Buffalo Bills. They would change my opinion. Wide receiver room, completely different. Curtis Samuel's been a bust so far there from a acquisition. I know he's a veteran, but he hasn't done anything for the Bills. Keon Coleman's still young as a rookie. I'm sure he'll be good as the season progresses, but he hasn't been necessarily production-wise what they were hoping for immediately. Khalil Shakir is their best wide receiver, and he's a little banged up right now. I think he's questionable for tonight's game. My point being is Josh Allen, though, with Davante Adams, yeah, the Bills become, I think, a much more dangerous team if that happens. If the Jets get Davante Adams, I got to see what Rodgers looks like tonight against the Bills. If they beat the Bills and then they acquire Davante Adams in a week, all right, the Jets at least are a factor in terms of that grouping of like 4 through 6, 4 through 7 in the AFC, is at least how I would view it. There's really no other team that I think is in the AFC even really going to be capable of acquiring Davante Adams.
Like, even if it was like, let's say the Jags are like, we're going to save our season.
They're not. Yeah.
Look, I don't think so, but I'll just be honest. Their general manager head coach combo's up against it, Gold, which means selling their soul doesn't exactly do them. We've talked about this all the time. Desperation does not help bad teams just decide to be bad in order to be good in the long run, because if they're bad, they could all be on their ass. And so I think maybe, but like, I'm just saying, I'm using them as an example of if they added him, I wouldn't care. It would not move the needle for me. There are only two teams, I think, in the AFC in which I would think dramatically or at least significantly different than I do now if they acquired them. Not the Jets. It's just the Bills and the Ravens. Now, the Ravens just had a massive game out of Flowers.
They just don't use receivers. To me, it's a waste. Like, I'll be honest, if I'm the Ravens, don't waste your picks. Why would you go and trade for Devontae Adams?
Flowers a lot.
He's coming off one of his best games of his career. Yeah. So, that's a good example to use today. He had 9 catches on 9 targets for like 120 in the first half or whatever it was. Typically, though, we know the history there in Baltimore. They don't usually utilize wide receiver. So if I'm Baltimore, I would not go trade for Devontae Adams, Cody. I don't think they're getting their money's worth at that point.
So if they did it, I would be like, wow, that's a team that is already dangerous who just got more dangerous, mm-hmm. right? Significantly more dangerous, because the number of weapons you can surround around Derrick Henry, who's currently on pace for 1,995 rushing yards, so 5 yards short of a 2,000-yard season, if you coupled it with actual receiver weapons, I'd be scared, because I saw the tight ends for the Ravens do well against Kansas City. They would then have real offensive weapons. So the fact that they can and are the best run defense in the NFL doesn't matter as much for facing the Ravens. It would be that they could attack you in a number of different ways instead. And so they would change my opinion a little bit. Not like, oh God, now they're better than the Chiefs for sure, but they would change it a lot, them and the Bills. The Bills are the obvious answer, I would say, at this point, because the Bills are the only team whose wide receivers I don't feel like I know all that well. I'm just taking guesses on whether or not I think they'll end up being good. Like, Shakir, I think, is good. Samuel stinks. Keon Coleman's fine. He might be, honest to God, the funniest part about Keon Coleman is they might have replaced Gabe Davis with Gabe Davis. That might be, Keon Coleman might just be Gabe Davis, which is fine. You could do worse than a wide receiver than Gabe Davis, but it just feels like they replaced one guy Coleman, who's kind of a one-trick pony with another.
9 catches, 175 yards, and 2 touchdowns for Keon Coleman so far.
That's Gabe Davis. You just gave me Gabe Davis' stat line from last year, I'm pretty sure, through the first 5 games.
What's Gabe Davis' stat line through this year?
Now, in fairness, Xavier Worthy, 12 catches, 179 yards, and 2 touchdowns. They almost have identical stat lines.
Oh, it's not an insult. Gabe Davis worked for their offense acceptably.
No, I'm saying between Worthy and Keon Coleman, because we all know the Chiefs trade with the Bills, yeah. And then they still got Keon Coleman, and all the jokes were there. And Worthy on opening night had the 2 touchdowns, and so everybody was clowning the Bills on that night. I'm just saying that Worthy and Keon Coleman, to this point, have the exact same production.
Worthy's got 1 extra touchdown and probably some rushing yards that Keon Coleman doesn't have, but yeah,
they're just not receiving, enough. But yeah, for sure.
Funny enough, Gabe Davis, 17 catches, 204 yards and 2 scores. So almost identical to the stats we just gave you for the other 2 guys. But yeah, that's the only team that I would regularly think makes me think about that, because that's just the way it is. Now, I'll say the Jags, back on them for just a second. Have you ever heard a coach say something so stupid in a post-game thing? I for the life of me, cannot understand why Doug Peterson, the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, would go on a limb to say, we need a culture change, knowing that he's the head coach. Have you ever heard a head coach say that about their team?
Only when they're hired initially, Cody. When the new head coach comes in, they say, hey, we got to change the culture around here. Like, okay.
Yeah, I remember them saying that like when JJ took over like being general manager, or when Andy Reid took over being the head coach of the Chiefs.
So yes, I've heard a head coach bring up changing the culture plenty. Usually not when things are going terribly and you've been there for a couple of years and you are on the hot seat. You know, that's what happened with Doug Peterson.
We've got to change. It's all of us, coaches, players, everybody. We have got to change right now that culture. Otherwise it just gets out of control. Right. It's we're on a slippery slope. We're right on the cusp of that slope. And at some point we just have to, enough is enough, and you got to have enough pride and figure out a way.
At some point, enough is enough. I mean, I feel like he was turning in his resignation
Did he quit?
Enough is enough. We're right on that cliff. We're about to fall off that cliff. Like, I mean, he's not stupid. He knows his job is on the line.
It didn't sound like he knew his job was on the line. It sounded like he quit.
To me, it sounds like a guy that knows that he's in London for 2 weeks. They just played a game. Now they get the Patriots. Sounds like he knows, like, oh, we're not going to fire me while the whole team is still in London, because I have to be here for, the team is here. But after my final game in London, if we lose to the Patriots in London next week, yeah, I'll be fired on that flight back.
Is the theme of the year get fired on your way back from London?
It happens a lot. That's usually after, it means you're usually going on a bye week too.
Because that already, the one coach firing we had this year was after the transatlantic flight back to New York City. It seems like Doug Peterson might be facing
Here's
a similar
the history effect. Of NFL coaches fired after London losses. So this is a real thing so far. This year was Robert Saleh. 2015, Joe Philbin with the Dolphins. 2014, it happened with Dennis Allen And maybe it'll happen with Doug Peterson
had
if they lose to the
Patriots. Slightly longer break. It's only been three. I'm surprised it's not more.
Yeah, the London thing's only been for, what, 15 years, if that, 10 years? That's like three coaches fired in 12 years of... When did the NFL start playing in London?
I don't know, 10, 15 years ago? Yeah, it feels about right.
Philbin might have been. That might have been.
Might have 07, been sorry, 07.
Okay.
So we're still, it's still a new, you know, in the NFL's history, a newer thing. To have three coaches fired since they've been playing in London, I think that's actually a pretty high percentage right now.
Since we're talking about, there was no Chiefs game this weekend. We obviously know the Royal season sadly ended last Thursday night. And I don't want to talk Missouri football because they played UMass. So that leaves us
on the road, too. What a weird scheduled game.
Yeah, who knows? But it's only their second road game. So I guess kudos, at least on that end. But I did feel like we deserve to give K-State a lot of props for what I think has turned out. Before this season, I would have not given them a ton of credit for this win. I wasn't like, all in gangbusters. Here comes Colorado, the unstoppable force. But by the time that thing kicked off, they were a 4-point favorite on the road against a confident, playing well, Colorado Buffaloes team who did not have a loss in conference at that point. K-State did. And they went on the road, and Avery Johnson, for a second, I thought might be hurt when he left the game holding his oblique, at least on that side. That was their best win of the season. Like, they've got some other ones coming up that are certainly going to be tougher, but that's an easy one to let get away from you, especially because the back-and-forth nature of college football and the back-and-forth nature of that game.
Well, because we saw them correct some of the issues from a few weeks earlier. When they played out in Provo, Utah against BYU, that was also a really late kickoff.
And got worked.
You're in altitude. They made way too many mistakes. And this game, after that first drive, you saw K-State settle in, you know, and it ended up being a really good football game, too. But the altitude, the later start, all those are challenges. I think the fact that they dealt with that at BYU earlier probably helped them in this game against Colorado. We can give, obviously, all the love we want to Avery Johnson, but DJ Giddens continues to be just so good for this football team. Dylan Edwards is the speedster, but DJ Giddens, 182 yards, the first tailback this year to get over 100 yards against the Wildcats. This has been a Colorado defense after being horrendous last year, much better against the run, and yet DJ Giddens is the first running back to go over 100 against them this year. So they just really, that was the difference in the game, is what they did on the ground. 185 yards on the ground. Colorado only had like 25, 30 yards on the ground. So
now Shadur was really good and threw for a whole
He went over his passing yardage.
Oh, that was your best bet from
over 308.
We basically know
mine
Travis
also
Hunter.
Went over, by the way. My yes. Spencer Rattler over 199.5.
Yeah, and you're right, Drew. Travis Hunter didn't.
Him and Jimmy Horn were out. I think one thing, too, we learned about K-State is when it came down to it, Avery Johnson needed to give them a drive. And he's been good all year, but...
But that's been the question a lot.
He needed to go in and win the game. It's like, yeah, you're good, and you're highly touted and all this other stuff. Can you go and win a game on the road? And he was able to lead them down there, so a very impressive win for K-State.
K-State might not win the Big 12 this year. It's obviously very competitive. People thought Utah was going to run away with it, and they're not. So it's super competitive. They might very well still win the Big 12. It's incredible. There's eight teams with one loss or less. I think there's like four undefeated teams in Big 12 play so far. But I do think that year two of Avery Johnson is going to look a lot better than year one. And like college quarterback play tends to go to the guys with experience. That's why all these transfer portal stuff, that's how all these quarterbacks end up in these major schools. Right later on down the road, that's how they end up at Ohio State and Alabama, and they're all like juniors or seniors by the time they get there. I think year two of Avery Johnson is going to look even better as a full-time starter.
I was going to say,
I understand he sat last year. As a full-time starter, I think there'll be an increase in his play, but he's a good player. They still have a chance to win the Big 12, even though they lost that one earlier, and they got beat up pretty bad by BYU.
Odds market right now over at FanDuel. Iowa State, the favorite to win the Big 12. Of course, those two teams will play each other the final week of the regular season. Iowa State plus 175. K-State, second best odds, sitting at around 3-1. Then BYU, who has been one of the surprises of the conference to this point in time, they're sitting at about 5-1. And then there's a massive drop off. Nobody's really buying into Texas Tech and Arizona State, despite how well they played. Arizona State, how can you not like their head coach and the energy that he's brought to that program and everything? But I don't think anybody truly believes Arizona State will be there at the end of this season. It's really a three-horse race to win the Big 12, and who's going to get the two spots to go down to, I'll say Dallas and then say Arlington before someone texts in. Anytime I say Dallas, we always say Dallas. I understand they play in Arlington. They're the Dallas Cowboys. We don't call them the Arlington Cowboys, but
it's
game
the
is
the metro area.
Mm-hmm. down in Dallas area. How about that?
There you go. Mm-hmm. That's covering all your bases. You really think someone was going to text?
Oh, it's happened.
Arlington.
Oh, it happens every single time we mention K-State maybe playing in Dallas. They'll be like, "You mean Arlington?"
Does anyone do that tonight when they're like, the Jets are going to take them on in New York?
New Jersey.
Does anyone say, it's New Jersey?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
There's always, you know this, come on now. There's always somebody. But no, I mean, like, I think it's a three-horse race. Don't you guys think? And you think there's any chance a Texas Tech or Arizona State? I think it's K-State, BYU, and Iowa State. One of those, two of those three are going to the Big 12 title game.
I would say yes.
Yeah, that feels right. It was funny, the juxtaposition this weekend, because Avery Johnson came through with the drive when they needed it, and Will Howard forgot how time works.
He was playing great too.
He forgot how many seconds.
That's what's great.
Like,
Will Howard was playing really, really well on the road in that environment. Like, that was a game that people were saying could springboard him to have a real chance to get to New York for the Heisman. I mean, that's how big it was. And then 6 seconds, I don't know what, scrambling, like, as if there was just 20 seconds on the clock. It was bizarre.
Almost mental felt lapse. Like, you could have run it in too. That's
it was
even
also
more
on
up.
Ryan Day, the head coach. We're talking about Ohio State Oregon game, obviously. Ryan Day, their head coach, in terms of timeout utilization, not realizing that the clock was going to run after they had a penalty. They thought the clock was going to stop. That was just a terrible sequence down the stretch for the entire Ohio State offense.
Pretty bad. Pretty bad. Either way, yeah, the Big 12's gotten real interesting.
Up next, let's get back to the Royals for a little bit, though. We know the lasting image of this season last week, but what does that mean for Bobby Wood Jr. going forward? And, oh yeah, we're going to talk about the Dallas Cowboys a little bit, and Jerry Jones asking if he's an idiot. Yeah, he asked. We'll answer next. Just getting started here on a Monday. Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll hear what J.J. Bacolo, Matt Quattrero had to say, in particular about how this offense could improve next season in one specific area. One other area where maybe you see improvement, it's hard to believe, but is it possible that Bobby Wood Jr. can continue to just get better? Remember, he, as we looked it up, what, not till next June or July will he turn 25 years old? So thinking that there's improvement for Bobby is not crazy, even though the numbers, you'd be like, what do you mean improve? The guy is, any other year would win MVP. He's going to finish second only because Aaron Judge was playing baseball this season. So I get it, but I think a lot of people saw the image of Bobby Wood Jr. on the edge of the dugout, watching a celebration, and it reminded them, as Vern pointed out with the caller on his postgame show, it reminded some people of Mahomes coming up just short against Tom Brady in the Patriots in his kind of first run through the postseason, and that motivated him and led him, of course, to the run that he is currently on. And that's the optimistic way of pointing out. The difference, of course, is that baseball, one player cannot just win you a World Series. Patrick Mahomes can win you a Super Bowl or two or three, you know, and hell, even during this run, the defense has helped him win a Super Bowl or two. So saying that, like, Bobby Wood Jr. can just go scorched earth and take this team to the World Series, I don't know if one player can do that. That's why we just saw what happened. You know, when you don't have the complimentary pieces around you, and if you're off for just a second, it can cost you a series.
It can. And yeah, those, especially when you're the team that has a payroll a third of the size as the other team, they can certainly cover those problems. It's so weird to me that the teams that they're number one, number two, number four, oh, shocker. The Guardians, of course, the annoyance that is teams like that always seem to combat that. The Royals won a World Series combating that once. But when you are up against that, it becomes a much bigger challenge in order to combat it. And so the thing is I actually think Vern's right, though. I think that clip, and then Gold, you talking to him in postgame, we're all standing around. I was listening to Bobby while you guys were shooting video because we were still waiting on Vinny Pasquantino and some other guys to talk. When you're sitting around and you see that and you know that he is the hardest working dude in the league too, in addition to it, he's got that mindset that is, I will work as hard as humanly possible in order to make this thing work. I'm pretty sure he's getting ready to go old school Mahomes scorched earth on the league next year, and that the numbers will reflect that. Not just the numbers, the play, the winning, all the things that you'd expect from the, I will drag every single person on this entire roster if I have to across the finish line of winning games, getting numbers. It just feels like that's, like, after the losing, the sad part of the losing soaks in for a minute, instead he's going to get pissed. Because the sad part, that's the normal, but then a couple days later, you're going to be like, now I'm mad, and I'm going to do anything to improve the little parts of my game. We've already seen massive jumps from him.
I don't doubt that, and I'm sure that will be his off-season motivation after he takes a week or so off to relax, and then he gets right back at it before we know it. That's how this thing goes. for athletes at that level, that caliber. I don't doubt any of that. I'm just saying that I don't know in baseball
if it works that way.
Yeah, like no, for him individually, sure. Does it? I mean, I would argue this year he willed them to victories. I would argue, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's fair.
Where's the improvement? I would, you know, right? You know, we're hearing from Q and
more
JJ homers, today,
but
that'll be the thing. Like, where does he think he can improve? Is it more walks? The stolen base numbers were down, even though they were still ridiculous, but like down from what people thought they would be, you know,
higher efficiency, I would say, in the stolen bases.
Yeah,
I don't need more stolen bases. I need less caught stealing.
You know, and the home run numbers were a little bit off of what people thought, but also he had more doubles and triples, I believe, than he had the year before. So what's the balance with him? But I don't doubt his motivation based off of this year. I think that's absolutely an image that will stick with him the rest of his career.
I think when we talk starting in like February, when they head up to camp, that'll be the number one thing. Be like, how did you take in, you know, how did you take in this offseason? He's like, I got mad. I went down and I started working out more, hitting the cage more, working on the small parts of my game, because he already walked significantly more this year than he did the year before. And his swing and miss was down and all these other things, right? It, like, I go back to the first year when he was in the majors, and I would say he was a below average defensive shortstop, to the point that we used to have JJ Piccolo on this show, Golden. We would ask the questions that were like, hey, does a permanent move to third make sense, or should it be something else, or where should he land? And now none of us, you know how stupid you would be if you try to come on the show right now and be like, hey, should Bobby play short, or should we just like move him to a different position? Like, are you kidding me? He should just play short, obviously. Right. He might win a gold glove there this year. Probably should win a gold glove there this year. No, I don't think that's crazy. I did look it up. He finished third in Major League Baseball in extra base hits. Shohei Ohtani finished with the most at 99. Aaron Judge finished with the second 99. So many. Aaron Judge finished with the second most with 95. And Bobby Witt Jr. finished with the third most with 88 extra base hits. So it's not like just because the home run totals aren't quite as high doesn't mean he's not getting into it. And the other part you forget about, and this is always like the counting stats that you care about in baseball that don't matter, and the MVP stuff that I think should matter more, is when races are close and two guys are having tremendous seasons, everything should matter. The number of home runs should matter, sure, but so should stolen bases and defensive efficiency. And the fact that Aaron Judge's offensive numbers came with 22 double plays and Bobby Witt only grounded into four. The fact that he helps his offense in doing those things should matter sometimes. His fielder's choice is not the same as Aaron Judge's fielder's choice. When races are close, I think it should all matter. But I just think that there's even more. Like, there's just another level. I'd just be stunned if there isn't another level of his game, which is an absurd thing to say about a guy who just went 30-30 for a second straight season, won the American League batting title, and might very well win the Gold Glove.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when we talk about this offseason, Camp Bobby or something, and I'll just have everybody come down and hit with him in Texas or something. Well, we got Camp Pat. Let's have Camp Bobby going as well.
I'll just tell you right now, if Kansas City just happens to draft a different generational superstar in their sport, in which they've done, I would request that he works out with Bobby Stroop. I don't know why that's
a requirement now.
I just got to say, if you're a generational athlete and you live in this city, that's your trainer. Good news for you. That's your only trainer.
Did you see in the Texas, the Red River rivalry game, Texas and Oklahoma, ended up being a blowout, but Quinn Ewers, of course, was coming back, the starting quarterback of Texas, was coming back from an injury, and during the broadcast, they mentioned that Texas was talking, basically, like, they reached out to Bobby, I believe that, if I heard the story right, they reached out to Bobby Stroop to find out, like, hey, what can he do to, I believe that's what I heard during the broadcast. So He's the best, man. He's the best. Why not? I mean, when it works for Patrick Mahomes, why not for Quinn Ewers? Why not for Bobby Wood Jr.? Why not for what's the Riola kid up in Nebraska?
Yeah, that he thing. Also works out with him.
Of course he does.
I'm sure he works out with tons of professional athletes, and probably even more so now that Bobby Wood Jr. and Patrick Mahomes are his clients. I'm just saying, if you're a generational athlete in this city, that's it. That's the guy. That's who you work out with.
Are you saying we can have three at one? We have two. We only have two pro teams. The chances of them having, I mean, I guess you could argue they already have had that. I mean, Travis Kelce's a generational athlete as well. Yeah. Chris Jones, you could argue, is that kind of player. But I hear what you're saying.
It's going to be a 15-year-old that they signed for Sporting. And then like,
there you go. There
what?
You go. That's what it is. Yeah.
He's just essentially the Messi of the MLS.
Perfect. Casey Curran. Yeah. Whoever.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Jason sounds... Curran might have that, actually.
Yeah, they actually have a couple of incredibly talented players.
Congrats to them, by the way. They guaranteed themselves at least one home playoff game for the first time in club history. That's why I'm rocking the KC Curran hoodie today. You know?
You are a season ticket holder.
I am.
Are you going to buy some playoff tickets?
Yeah. We just got an email last night about that, actually. So, yeah, I'll be out there.
You gonna be out there having some fun?
You've been to a game or two out there as well.
I have. I've been to a few. My wife was actually just asking. I think she's interested in trying to get out for a game. But this is kind of late in the year. Might be next year before we take everybody.
I mean, we could go to a playoff game. I think I can get. I don't know if there's a presale. We'll talk off air.
If there's a presale, maybe yeah.
I can get some extra tickets. Anyway, yeah, man. It's obviously fun to think about where the city is at with two of the generational athletes in Bobby Wood Jr. and Patrick Mahomes and some of the similarities. And someone said, yeah, let's hope that Bobby Wood Jr. watching the Yankees celebration is much more like how Mahomes treated it than Stephon Diggs, which didn't really change anything for Stephon Diggs when he watched the Chiefs celebrate.
He's still motivated to win. He's just not as good at helping
there you
about
go.
Doing
there
it.
You go.
Know, those are the difference.
Thinking of winning, it's not happening down in Dallas. I say that with a smile on my face because let's be real. We can all act like we don't care about the Cowboys, but we also watch because it's fun to see them suffer. It just is. And what a train wreck the Dallas Cowboys have been and currently are, and even more so after yesterday's embarrassing loss in their own building. Guys, it's one thing for the Cowboys to lose. They've been, for I think, four home games in a row going back to last season, as we all know, the Packers playoff game where the Packers came in there and destroyed them. This is a Cowboys team that just gets embarrassed in their own building, which makes it even worse. Because they're in a bad division, it'd be foolish to say like they're out of the playoff picture or anything like that. But
yeah, that
they didn't do anything in the offseason. We all acknowledge that, like, oh, they brought back Zeke Elliott and that was it. That was it. And then now they've suffered injuries. All that's true. And they have taken a giant step back from a team that had won three straight years of 12 games, three straight years. They are not the same team. And yesterday they gave up 49 points, I think it was, 47 points to the Detroit Lions. And this was Jerry Jones after the game when he was asked about, of course, the future of Mike McCarthy.
Oh, I haven't even considered that. I'm not considering that. Just so you're clear, not considering that.
But you've done it.
I wouldn't be a hypothetical in that matter. Do you think I'm an idiot? Do you? Okay, well, I'm not going hypothetical with you about when I'd consider coaching change in light of the timing we're sitting here with. I'm not at all. Do you think I'm an idiot?
Do you think I'm an idiot?
Do you think I'm an idiot?
Do you? Could you imagine a billionaire asking you that? Clark Hunt just looked you in the face, Alex, and said, do you think I'm an idiot?
I couldn't tell if the reporter audibly said no or he just like shook his head no.
No?
Would you have shouted out loud like, no, I don't, sir?
Yes.
Yes,
you
I do.
You see this team success? I do think you're an idiot.
I do think you're an idiot when it comes to football decisions for the last 25 years.
That would actually be like a Mount Rushmore of sports reporter moments if he said, do you think I'm an idiot? And he said, yes. Yes, I do, Jerry. Yes, I do. You know what? Now that you've mentioned it, I do think you're an idiot. Here's the truth. Dak Prescott's play is not good.
It really do.
That's their biggest problem. Dak Prescott's play is really, really, really down. McCarthy is not a good enough coach to overcome bad quarterback play. When he was a good coach in Green Bay, it's when Aaron Rodgers was playing well. When he's been a good coach in Dallas, it's when Dak Prescott is playing well. He does not overcome poor quarterback play. He has not consistently done that at any particular point. And here's the truth. I would be stunned to find out if Jerry Jones hasn't just been like, how you doing, Bill? To Bill Belichick. I'd be stunned if he hadn't just been like, I'm just checking in to see how the broadcasting job's doing, Bill. Just checking. No real reason why. Just wanted to find out because that's who he's going to hire at the end of the year anyway.
That's what I mean. That noise is only going to heat up, and I understand that. I still don't know if Belichick will get right back into coaching or going to get back into coaching period or not. But of course, the Cowboys, the Eagles, if they fire Sirianni, the Giants, if they fire Dable, those are the three spots. Like we could have, we said that before the season started. Dallas, Philly, and New York, all three could have job openings, and of course, Belichick will be a candidate. Although we all found out he wasn't as much of a candidate as we thought this past offseason.
No, he wasn't.
The Falcons could, you know, everybody thought that was a place was going to hire him. They decided to go with Raheem Morris, who is doing really well with the Falcons. They're playing a lot better football. But the Cowboys are just a laughing stock of the NFL right now. They bring it on themselves because, frankly, of their owner willing to talk after every single
That's
game.
That's wild, man. I can't imagine if Clark Hunt spoke after every game like
you
that.
You think I'm an idiot?
In 2012?
Do you?
Like when they were the worst team in the NFL. They were the worst team in the NFL before Andy Reid got here. Could you imagine if after that, after every game that season, Tyler Pink throws three picks, they lose the game 30-13, and Clark Hunt was just available to the media after every game? God, no, please.
And to be fair, are we sure that Bill Belichick would be the number one option? Because you just mentioned mediocre quarterback play. The one time that we've seen Bill Belichick with bad quarterback play, it wasn't good either. So are we
I don't think Dak's a bad quarterback, though. I really don't.
Correct. But, I mean, if he's not playing well, are we sure that Bill Belichick can be the guy that can overcome sketchy quarterback play?
We discussed that last coaching cycle this past offseason. Like, Bill Belichick, defensive-minded head coach in 2024, or I guess it'd be 2025 at that point in time, the track record of not having Tom Brady is not great.
No,
for him. So I think
Dak Prescott is a good quarterback. Generally speaking,
my thing is if I'm having a bad year, if I'm a young like up and coming head coordinator, so like Ben Johnson, the OC in Detroit, who we all thought would have got a job and he turned it down, and eventually will be a head coach. If I have a choice to go be the head coach of the New York Giants, who you know would think at that point they'll be drafting a young quarterback, or the Dallas Cowboys, knowing the circus that comes with the Cowboys, I just wouldn't want that to be my first job, to have an owner slash general manager that is, you know, basically just running the Barnum and Bailey circus again down there.
In a weird way, I actually feel like that's why Bill Belichick fits better there than some of the other jobs he was looking at. Dak Prescott is an established quarterback. He's worked with an owner who wants the spotlight. Like, he has done some of those things, and it worked set up under those conditions. And if in addition to that, he'll let somebody else be the player personnel guy, he'll let somebody else do the drafting. Like, I get it. The same way Andy Reid let someone do the drafting. Do we think that Andy Reid doesn't sit in a single draft meeting and talk about the types of players he likes? You think he doesn't look at a single piece of tape and talk about the type of player? Of course he does. But just as long as inevitably somebody's making the decision and Bill doesn't have to guess again on another quarterback, I actually don't think it's all that bad of a fit. Bill Belichick is still one of the single greatest coaches of all time. I don't think he just lost it. I think he had bad quarterbacks. And like most coaches, you got like really bad quarterbacks. Like, you got like bad quarterbacks, not like mediocre. Starting Jacoby Brissett's of the world. Yeah, everyone's going to coach bad. Mayo stinks too.
It do. It really do.
Do you think I'm an idiot?
So great. I was like, when I saw that, thanks, Jerry.
You think I'm an idiot? Do you?
I don't think there's any way.
That's the one you've pissed him off.
To your point, if a billionaire looks you dead in the face and asks you if you're an idiot, I don't see how you say yes. I don't know if you can.
But it would be such a great moment. It would. If you just looked him in the face and you said, yes.
Well, I do question. Do you think I'm an idiot? No, but I do question your decision making at times, Jerry.
I don't think that's unfounded.
It's just to say it would be, and that would be an all-timer.
They're lucky that division stinks. You know, like, everybody views like, oh, maybe the NFC East is actually really good. No, it's just they're all kind of struggling there. Like, the Commanders are a great story right now, right? And I think the Commanders are going to have a chance to be atop that division all year. But they only have, what is it, a game lead on Philly. Then the Cowboys are two back, and the Giants are, I think, toast.
When's the last time that division was good? Like, 2010?
Like, as in more than one competitive team? A couple of years ago.
When the Giants,
the Cowboys and the Eagles were both two really good
Cowboys
teams.
Cowboys
like
have won 12 games for three straight years. Yeah. The Eagles were in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. But just right now, if you look at the division, just because three teams are within a game of each other doesn't mean it's a great division. You know what's a great division? The NFC North. That's the best division in football.
That's four teams with four wins. First time that's happened through 6 weeks, I think, in like 15 years.
And they've only played one divisional game in that division, so that's going to change everything eventually.
Not all things are created equal either, though, because by that same metric, the Bears have only beaten teams with a 232 winning percentage, even though all four of their wins are against just bad, bad teams.
I don't know.
But beat bad teams is not all that big of a deal. Caleb Williams look really
good. NFC North, I don't know how you can say, though, it's not the best division right now. It's early October, but as of now. Now, how was things for you this weekend, though? Because on a Friday's show, we said, hey, what are you doing for the weekend? You got invited from a friend to
my daughter's dance studio. He was performing.
Worlds of Fun Haunt is, I think, what they call it.
Halloween Haunt?
Halloween Haunt.
Yeah.
Okay. And we were going through, like, hey, should you take the kids? This thing could be a little scary. Your kids are 9 and 8 and 6.
And the general consensus from the people was maybe don't. I'd say 70-30 against, including Rob Collins, who said there's like gore and guts and stuff, and maybe you should avoid that. I had spoken to somebody, a friend of ours who works at Worlds of Fun. He had said, do not take them inside the haunted houses. They recommend them for kids over the age of 14, just so you know. All right, so general consensus. I sent you a video. Desmond loved it. He loved the six-year-old loved it. Now, we did not go into the haunted houses. There are like haunted houses you can go in. Okay. We just did the stuff that you can like physically be outside of the park of, yeah, there are some like headless people or people who are like jumping up to maybe scare you a little bit. There's fog and, you know, like there's like the normal, like if you went through like, but we didn't go physically.
So the text line was talking about the actual haunted house. I think you were good because you didn't go in there. It would have been a problem
otherwise. We avoided those because of what the person who worked at Worlds of Fun suggested. So we did not. But outside of that, he loved it. As you saw, he was hiding in the smoke and then running out and trying to scare strangers. So he was actually actively participating in, I would say, the Halloween stuff. My daughter did not like the scary stuff as much. Did not like people jumping out of fog as much. Yeah. But we were there to see her friend. So essentially, it was just like one giant musical theater play. So of course she liked that. It was just people dancing and performing. There were two things I said stood out. One, I couldn't believe the no-scare necklaces were $15, so we didn't buy them. I just said, well, you're just going to scare my kids.
Well, you didn't go inside the haunted house, so it would have been a waste of money anyway.
No, but they didn't jump out at you just in like the normal public areas, too. And I'm just like, they're just going to have to get scared. Life is life. Not spending $30 on Nobu necklaces. Life is life. So
you just said, screw that?
Yeah, we just said, screw that, and okay. Just let them get scared.
Okay.
The second part was the initial play thing that like her dance studio partner is in. You know, pretty normal. Like they make a couple of jokes. They play Hot to Go from Chapel Roan, right? Everyone's having a good time. The second one starts right after it. And I would say it's more, it borderline felt like burlesque. I was like, should both of my kids who are 8 and 6 be here? There's a lot of like sexual suggestiveness in this. And it was like 9 o'clock at night.
Well,
people were on a wearing, Friday night. I would say some pretty revealing. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with like them offering this. What I'm saying is it was hard to pull the plug in the middle because it started right after the other show. I was like, should my kids
So you
be
sat
here?
There and watched the whole time with your kids?
Yep. Yeah.
Did they say anything?
Nope. Okay. They just danced around, had a good time.
They didn't realize what. See,
you know,
I think you're
know,
good.
Like, can you watch a kids movie when you're older and you're like, that was the joke they were making?
They're so young, they had no idea that it was that. So you're good, I think.
You think it's worse if they're like 13
yes.
and they're like
yes.
very aware of what they're watching?
Yes.
Because at this point, they didn't say
it. Did you enjoy it?
It's fine. Yeah. You know, Halloween is it's not a no holiday for me. It's a fine. Some years more into it than others. But you know, I've got kids now, so essentially Halloween's just taking my kids trick-or-treating. I don't have to do much at the house anymore. You know, I don't do much at the house anymore. I don't set out a bowl of candy ever since some kids stole.
You don't pass out candy? You guys turn the lights off if you're in that house?
We're gone. We're not at our house.
The whole time?
Yeah, we go up to a different place to go trick-or-treating with like some friends, so we're never there.
But you don't even leave a bowl of candy
I used to
out?
Do that. I drew the line when they stole the bowl. Not the candy. I assume
so just
some,
buy a cheap plastic Halloween.
Who steals the bowl,
but
though?
Just don't have a nice bowl out there. Buy a cheap plastic container. Leave it on the front porch. If someone steals it, you spent $2.99 on it and be done.
Fine, but also, I got to assume an adult was making a bad... Because no kid has ever been like, boy, this is a nice bowl.
Don't leave
this
the nice bowl.
No 8-year-old's ever been like, this is a nice-looking bowl. I do think I'll take this with me. That'll work Just out great. It'll look great in the foyer.
A cheap plastic pumpkin and pour a bunch of, you know...
Well, I think what...
Hershey Kisses or, I mean, Hershey Bars and you know, whatever,
M&Ms.
One
fruity candy and one chocolate candy, is my opinion.
It was always funny when we'd go trick-or-treating and the people, like, they'd have their lights off, but there'd be a bowl and they'd have a sign that says, please to only take 2. It's like, really?
People started putting Ring cameras on that stuff. They're gonna.
That's true. Now you can really
look,
tell.
Are they probably watching it? Now. Probably not.
For they can go back and watch if something happens to their property and stuff. Mm-hmm. I get that.
It'd be a fun way to like scare. You know, you can scare kids a little bit. Like, you know, you can
talk to them through the camera.
Yeah, talk.
I see you grab 6. Just
excuse me.
Yeah.
Someone says, Cody, were you the guy as a kid who stole the bowl?
No.
Were you stealing all the candy?
No. I mean, look, we were. I'll just be honest. The more and more I like go around things, like we walked around Worlds of Fun and then I was telling him about how we used to sneak in through the side gate underneath the roller coaster and stuff. And I was like, man, what was I doing this stuff? I was just a terrible kid. We did some mean things to kids on Halloween and I'm not going to pretend like I didn't. I did not steal anyone's bowl.
Wow.
But if I have to admit to some of the stuff we did on Halloween's past,
what's the worst thing you
did?
Give me an example. What's one thing you did?
Hit a kid with a pee-filled balloon is probably the worst.
Jeez.
That's probably maximum.
Dang.
But there's some pretty not good stuff
in
there.
How did he get to that point?
It was a tag-along situation, but it wasn't good.
We'll revisit this, I'm sure, on Halloween or something. Yeah, when we get to the end of the month. Up next, though, let's talk some more NFL. As it relates to the Chiefs and what we're seeing from a couple other AFC teams and why it doesn't really matter after another week next.